KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego Park and Market in the heart of downtown San Diego, offering a flexible venue for meetings, conferences, and events of all sizes. Cityscape views, modern space, built-in AV, on-site staff, and no catering requirements. Details at parkandmarket.ucsd.edu.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Thursday, June 4th. Today, we're bringing you local election results, and we'll also hear from candidates. More on that next, but first, the headlines. As of last night, Democrat Javier Becerra and Republican Steve Hilton were each leading their respective parties in the crowded race for governor of California. With roughly 37% of statewide votes already counted, the two are essentially tied so far. Cal Matters says it could take days or weeks to completely count all the votes. Democrat Tom Steyer sits in third, followed by Republican Chad Bianco in fourth place overall. The two candidates that are able to secure the most votes, regardless of party, will advance to November's general election. One of the most watched House races is District 48. The seat will represent voters in northern San Diego County, parts of Riverside County, and Palm Springs. It's one of the five red seats Democrats are hoping to flip blue following the passage of Prop 50. Early results show Republican Jim Desmond is leading, followed by Democrat Marnie Van Wilpert. The two top vote-getters here will also advance to the general election in November. Two professors from UC San Diego's School of Social Sciences say a shift in our cultural norms is why we're seeing more politicians using swear words. The professors say that according to their data, the F-word or F-bomb has seen a significant drop in the list of words that Americans consider most offensive. They say that applies to politics too. A study that started in 2014 found a year-over-year increase in swearing and political tweets. Whether a politician cursing comes off as genuine or pandering is decided by whether it consistently aligns with the persona they've built over time. The professors add that this may not be evenly applicable across the board, as legislative behavior suggests that women and minority politicians are held to different expectations. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need. Early results show Measure A, the lone ballot measure in the city of San Diego, is losing, with 58% of voters saying no. Measure A would impose a new tax on second homes that are vacant for most of the year. It would raise an estimated $9 to $21 million for city services in its first year. Steve Russell is president and CEO of the San Diego Housing Federation, which supported Measure A.
The No on A campaign, you know, outspent us 1.3 million to 300,000. And so, you know, it speaks to the fact that really wealthy interests can still kind of control the public dialogue.
Mark Kersey is president and CEO of the San Diego Taxpayers Association, which opposed Measure A.
If they really wanted to, they could have said, okay, the money raised by this is going to go into a housing fund that's going to actually pay for affordable housing or subsidized housing or anything like that. And they didn't. They just put it right into the city's general fund where it could be used for employee salaries or pensions or basically anything the city pays for.
The registrar of voters is expected to continue counting ballots in the coming days and weeks. Sticking with the city of San Diego, in the hotly contested race to represent District 2 on the city council, Nicole Crosby and Richard Bailey are solidly in the top two positions. Bailey is a business owner, a former mayor of Coronado, and a Republican turned independent. He told KPBS that San Diego should reduce the size of its city government.
They've allowed the city essentially to become a jobs program now, where you have a very bloated city government that's really causing the structural deficit to exist. And we need to reform that.
Crosby is a deputy city attorney who was endorsed by the County Democratic Party. She told KPBS she's proud to be a city employee.
I have prosecuted hate crimes, prosecuted gun crimes, protected victims of domestic violence and elder abuse. I am actually here for the people and making sure that any of the development we do, make sure that we have the infrastructure to sustain it.
District 2 includes Claremont, Ocean Beach, and Point Loma. Turning to the county's second largest city, Chula Vista, incumbent Republican Mayor John McCann has a wide lead in the mayoral primary there. According to early results, Chula Vista Elementary School District Trustee Francisco Tamayo is running a distant second. If those results hold, McCann and Democrat Tamayo will face off in the November general election. McCann is already looking forward to November.
I'm just very thankful for the voters of Chula Vista. Chula Vista is my hometown. I love this town, and I work every day to make the quality of life better for everyone who lives in Chula Vista.
Democrat Yair Gersten is in third place. Now to the County Board of Supervisors. Democrats see an opportunity in the District 5 race to win a seat now held by Republican Jim Desmond. Early results have another Republican in the lead, San Marcos Mayor Rebecca Jones. Democrat Kyle Crail has the second most votes. His team held a watch party at a Vista Brew Pub last night. There was an unexpected delay in the first results. KPBS talked to him right after they were released.
I'm feeling relieved after an hour of waiting for results, but it's my first time running for office, and it's very exciting, and I just want to serve my community that I grew up in.
Vista Mayor Republican John Franklin lags just behind Crail in early results. The top two finishers will face off in November's general election. For the latest results and updates through the day, visit kpbs.org. Could you save a life in 5 minutes? It's CPR and AED Awareness Week. Reporter Katie Heisen went to a free city workshop this week to learn how.
Press! Well, you can tell by the way I use my walk that I won't spend no time to talk.
San Diego Project Heartbeat trains people how to do CPR and use a defibrillator, or AED.
Stay clear of patient. Analyzing heart rhythm.
They want to make AEDs as accessible as fire extinguishers. They've helped place more than 11,000 in the San Diego region since 2001, saving 223 lives so far.
Which may not seem like a lot, but if it's your loved one, it's huge.
Maureen O'Connor is their program manager. She says it's better to do bad CPR than none at all. But too often, bystanders don't jump in. And if the person needing help is a woman, they're less likely to get it.
Only 39% of women in public, so less than half, receive CPR because the public are afraid to bare the person's chest and put their hands on the person's chest. But if they don't do that, they may as well just stand there and watch that person die.
Project Heartbeat will host its next free workshop on June 16th at the Point Loma Hervey Branch Library. Katie Heisen, KPBS News.
Two local artists are celebrating their end of residency exhibition while also pushing back against harmful narratives as women of color living between borders. Arts reporter Audie McAfee speaks with them about identity and belonging as America approaches its 250th birthday.
Marcela Larcon Lopez and Eden De La Barra finished their emerging artist residency at the Arts District Liberty Station last year. At the end of the program, artists participate in an end-of-year exhibition. Lopez and Delavara's exhibition is called Fragmented Stories. It combines paintings and textiles, exploring identity, history, and the body as women of color. Delavara says the showcase carries many meanings for them.
Oh, Marcella and I's work does pull in some different directions, but I think there's also a lot of unity in what we're trying to say and the heart behind our work. So I think Fragmented Stories kind of encapsulates those themes.
When you look at their art displayed on the gallery walls, it almost looks like they planned it together.
I didn't see her and she didn't saw me, but we saw each other's work. And then I started like catching myself, like using some, you know, like unconsciously, like using the same colors.
While De La Vara resides in San Diego, Lopez had to cross the border from Tijuana every time she wanted to work on her art.
Like a very hard process to just crosswalking and walk, you know, walking the border and then getting to the trolley and then the bus and then come and paint and then go back and la la la. And that's like every day. And it was like very nerve-wracking and a very harsh experience.
Lopez's residency announcement gave her more exposure, but it also made her feel more vulnerable to public comment, like negative messages on her Instagram account. and a feeling of being monitored every time she crossed the border. She says this experience helped shape the main theme that comes across in her paintings, surveillance.
So I started thinking about this virtual surveillance and, you know, like all these like notifications I was receiving from ICE and the border and the visa and in my bank account and my emails, you know, just for crossing the border and stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm being identified.
During the process of traveling and creating her art, Lopez says she doesn't necessarily feel connected to the American dream.
I'm not an American in the America for the Americans way and all of that in a nationalist way or in a legal way, right? I am an American in the sense that I live in America, the continent.
De La Vara says she also feels frustrated by where the country stands today.
I think 250 years, you like see that number and you're like, wow, this is where we're at now. For all of the effort and work that's been put in, surely there should be more to show for it.
De La Vara says her father is Mexican and her mother is Black. She says growing up in a country that hasn't always been kind to those communities made it difficult to fully explore her identity.
I feel like I am like the product of histories that I don't have access to, in that there are voids and veils in my own family history that results in a lack of access to my own personal history and knowledge of my ancestors.
And De La Vara has a personal connection to both America and Liberty Station.
My grandpa came to San Diego as in the Navy, and this was the first place he came, like right before my mom was born. He was trained here.
Because of the sacrifices her family made when they first came to San Diego, she says she's still hopeful about the future.
I do think that one of the things that I think is beautiful about America, and specifically like being Black in America, is this like really rich legacy of creativity. And I think America is a place that is really rich with creatives of all backgrounds.
De La Vara says coming together through art matters now more than ever.
Each piece of work that we make like in partnership with one another is like one step closer to like building a bridge and understanding that like in many ways, like we both are like American. We both live on this like continent in this land that we share.
Their showcase, Fragmented Stories, will be on view at Arts District Liberty Station through July 17th. Audie McAfee, KPBS News.
That's it for the podcast today. This podcast is edited by Brooke Ruth and hosted and produced by me, Lawrence K. Jackson. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
KPBS On Demand is supported by ACLU of San Diego and Imperial Counties. The work of the ACLU is about closing the gap between the America that was promised and the America that is. Learn more at www.aclu-sdic.org.